Radio. About to commence.
And good Tuesday morning. 7:05 on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. It is 65 degrees. Carl and Linda Bott still on the East Coast, Washington, D.C., on some family business. But in the studio today, our guest host, Mark Beauchamp. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Bob, and thanks so much. As you indicated, I'm going to be subbing for Carl and Linda today and tomorrow. That's Wednesday. Former supervisor Trish Clark and Reverge Anselmo, who's a very interesting guy and who built and owns Anselmo Vineyards east of Reading, about 20 miles maybe, will be hosting the show. Today, in the first hour, my guests will be Jim Dyer, musician, songwriter, journalist, and former entertainment editor of the Record Searchlight. And later in the first hour, David Benda, my former colleague at the Record Searchlight, who has been covering business for probably the last, much of the last decade anyway. And if you like live music, you'll be interested in what Jim's got to say. And if you're a part of the economy and who isn't, you'll want to know some of David's thoughts. At 8 o'clock, I'm going to have Aaron Ryan, leader of the Tea Party Patriots, Reading Tea Party Patriots, along with Bob Exner, I think I got his name right, who is the group's videographer and a portrait artist who, I won't say criminal portrait artist, but that doesn't sound quite right, but he's worked with law enforcement on some very high-profile cases, including the Green River case as well as the Unabomber case, so it should be interesting to talk to him a little bit. But first, as I did yesterday, Carl gets a chance to rant a little bit, and I'm gonna rant too at the beginning of the show by sharing an item I included in the column I did for the Record Searchlight on Saturday, and it's about our premier tourist attraction. And I'm gonna quote from it here: "My visiting 12-year-old daughter was grossed out by it. The spiders, the cobwebs, the broken tiles, the dirt, the dust, and the dinginess. I'm talking about the Sundial Bridge, supposedly Reading's premier tourist attraction. Realtor Ron Largent flagged this on his blog a couple of weeks ago, and I linked to it on Reading.com. But I hadn't been to the Sundial Bridge in a while, and last week I saw it through the eyes of my daughter, who happened to cross the bridge on its opening day 6 years ago. Now I know the city's broke, and under the agreement with the McConnell Foundation and Turtle Bay Exploration Park, the city is responsible for maintenance of the $23.5 million bridge. So maybe painting and power washing is out of the question, at least for now. But why couldn't Turtle Bay volunteers, or a troop of Boy Scouts, or even some of our legions of folks on work release from the Hoosgow have a go at the bridge with mops, brooms, and dustpans? And maybe some local artists could pitch in and fix the broken tiles. In places, the bridge is looking like some pretty bad dental work. If the bridge is, in fact, ground zero for our tourist industry, we need to take more pride in it. Come on. If present trends continue, and I don't see any reason why they're not, there won't be much to look at by the time Turtle Bay finishes its controversial and much and swanky hotel. Anyway, that's my rant for today, and we got to take a quick commercial message, a commercial break, and we'll be right back with Jim Dyer and David Benda of the Record Searchlight.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Twelve minutes now after 7 o'clock on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Weather brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. The high today will be about 90 degrees under sunny skies. Mostly clear tonight. Excellent sleeping weather with a low of 64. Warming up as we head deep into the week with a high of 95 by tomorrow and 102 slated for Thursday. Then it'll start cooling off once again. Currently outside our studio, 65 degrees. And now back to Mark Beauchamp here on KCNR 1460.
I dream about the places that I'll see when I leave this town. Just how very good it'll be
Thanks, Bob. And what you're hearing just now is the Jim Dyer Band. And the front man for the Jim Dyer Band, none other than Jim Dyer, my former colleague from the Record Searchlight, is in the studio this morning. And I thought long and hard about how to introduce Jim, and I think I'm just going to kind of wing it here. Jim, I worked at the Searchlight for about 3.5 years, from 2004, I guess, until 2007 or so. And I knew Jim. He was the editor of the Date magazine. I didn't know him well, but I knew him. And I knew him well enough to know that he was a guy who, like a lot of us, are stuck in jobs that don't necessarily play to our strengths. But unlike a lot of us, you know, instead of just complaining about it more bitterly every year as time goes on, Jim had the courage to do something about it, and he basically he said, basically take this job and shove it. And he did it during a very tough and uncertain economic time. And he left the paper, and he's been on sort of a personal and professional odyssey for the past 2 years or so. And one of the results of this is the CD that I'm holding in my hand right now, Magical Land, the Jim Dyer Band, which came out about a year ago now. And that Magical Land that you just heard was the title cut. And it features local musicians besides Jim, Tori Pratt singing, as well as musicians who have worked with Merle Haggard and others around here. And it's quite an accomplishment. And, Jim is an interesting guy. And I, like I said, I didn't know him that well, but as I've gotten to know him in the last year or so particularly, he strikes me as someone who has emerged from this journey of a professional and personal journey happier and much more interesting person, and who has found a creative strength and a creative strain in himself that is really inspirational, I think, for people who feel like they want to do something different but they don't know what it is. Jim is a living testament to doing it, finding it, and excelling at it. So with that sort of long-winded introduction, welcome to the studio, Jim Dyer.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for that.
Well,
the second part of that is I'm still rethinking that decision to leave a steady job and go from the wonderful paid profession of journalism to an even better paid profession of a musician, and musician in Reading to boot. So,
one of the reasons I've
got a CD and I live in the gutter.
One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is to talk about live music and a particular aspect of live music that you and I have talked about and is an issue. And it has to do with local venues who book acts such as yours and others that come in and play their own material and also do covers of other tunes. And the covers of other tunes increasingly are getting them, these bands, or I should say the owners of these venues, into trouble with the supposed owners of the copyrights of the tunes that they're covering.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that and what that means in your opinion what that means for local music?
Yeah, it's kind of it's sort of an odd situation. I think primarily the idea of ASCAP, BMI, the songwriters unions, I guess the copyright entities is good that they would take a certainly music that's played on the radio, played on in films, and make sure that the songwriters are getting paid for that. In terms of live music venues, though, it gets a little strange. And I think so what happens is that if you try to do live music in your club and you and you play anything other than original music, then you kind of come under this realm of copyright. And so there are three entities that can come in and basically, demand that you pay a certain fee to do that cover material. The issue that I think a lot of musicians have, even musicians who regularly are paid by BMI, is that that is not usually equitable in terms of what's played in a live club. So and certainly what the trouble that a lot of people have is that if you have a small place in Weaverville or Mount Shasta, Dunsmuir or something that is trying to do live music to bring people in and create a bit of a scene, and suddenly you have BMI saying we need $1,000 from you a year or 6 months, every 6 months, or BMI and all these entities coming in, then those clubs really can't afford to pay that. I mean, they're running on a pretty fine margin, so they can't really do live music. So in essence, especially in the smaller communities, it really shuts down the live music scene. So, and that's not good for, you know, there's a tradition of folk music. There's a tradition of playing other people's music. And I think in a live situation, there should be a different set of rules that apply so that these scenes can sort of survive.
I'm not quite sure I understand the underlying rationale for this. It's like if you go to a venue, I just pick one off the top of my head, like the post office, a few blocks from here, post office saloon, and you hear a band there, and they play, say, a Creedence Clearwater song. How does that hurt John Fogerty? I mean, my feeling is, if I haven't heard that song in 20 years and I hear it, I might be tempted to go back home and, you know, order it on Amazon or download it on iTunes, and that would benefit John Fogerty. It would be a kind of an advertisement for him and his band that, you know, is not top of mind anymore. Am I missing something here?
Well, no. That I think that's the case. I think if you bring that song about, then there's more notoriety about that song, and that people would seek that out, and that the artist would probably benefit from it that way. I guess in a perfect world, there would be somebody logging, okay, just played a Creedence Clearwater, so that's 10 cents towards John Fogerty or something like that. But it never works out. No one ever tracks that. So, and, you know, you can see maybe in a larger city where a club's making, you know, exponentially more money off of maybe cover music, that some of this might, you know, there might be a base of reality. But the bottom line is, here, a lot of people think that this is just money that supports the bureaucracy of BMI or ASCAP, that kind of thing. So,
okay, well, keep that thought. I want to come back to that. We got to take a quick message, commercial message, and we'll be right back.
It is 65 degrees here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Many of life.
The Sightline Agency, Exterminators, and your local Dairy Queen.
This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road, just down from the Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley is the owner. He was a veteran with the 82nd Airborne, or is a veteran, I should say. He's been serving local customers since 1985. If you need Dish Network, he's your man to go to. Dish Network, how do you want your HDTV? First 20 people to bring in a trashed out old remote, maybe the dog got hold of it or went through the washer for whatever reason, Doug's going to help you get a brand new one. Give him a call at 244-1988, B&T Satellite, just off Airport Road on Charland Drive. Now, back to our guest host, Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. And you're just hearing the first cut off of Jim Dyer's CD, Magical Land. It's called Hold On. And we've been talking with Jim, the first segment here, about the live music scene in Reading. And Jim, thanks for being here again. And whereabouts can where can people hear your group? Your groups? You've got two, actually. Now you've got the Jim Dyer Band. You've also got a sort of a Newgrass band called Muletown that plays around. Where can we hear you?
And I play in a third band called the Brendan Albert Band. He's a songwriter here in town. And we typically play at the Vintage restaurant and wine bar downtown, across from the Cascade Theater, actually across from Market Street Steakhouse. And that's been a really great venue for live music, and all kinds of different music, jazz, singer-songwriters, folk Americana, that kind of thing. So that's been a really bright spot for musicians. They've been able to get in there and have a nice place to play. And Janice and Alex down there have been just great to the scene. Also, the Post Office has been a long time. The Post Office Saloon in downtown, it's been a long time music venue here in Reading. It's been an active supporter. But there's quite a few places that are doing music now. We've played at Vintner's Cellar on California Street. quite a few clubs that are doing it now. Johnny's has consistently had kind of rock and roll bands on the weekends, and they've done some blues shows.
What role do you think music and live music has played in the revitalization of downtown?
Well, you know, things are happening downtown a little bit. There's some more activity, more businesses, and I think ideally there's, you know, maybe more of an urban scene that would be created by actually downtown housing and getting people circulating down here, just being around down here. And so part of that is events, and Art Hop has certainly played a big part of that, getting people circulating around, going, seeing, you know, exhibits in the various businesses, and also music plays into that as well. So, and I think, you know, ideally that clubs will put live music into their businesses as a way to bring people in, and that they and everybody kind of benefits. They get better numbers and more business, and the musicians are able to get paid and do what they love to do. So, right down from here, from our place where we're sitting, Maxwell's is has a commitment to do live music. We just played there with the string band, and before that it was the Downtown Eatery, and they were doing a lot of all kinds of shows, a lot of alternative shows, traveling bands that were coming through that needed a place to play. So it's kind of nice. There's a little something going on, and Lulu's is always has been a long time Thursday night blues music venue for the Shasta Blues Society, and even Maritime has done music, Maritime and Bombay's, and so there's a lot of folks that are, I think, see the benefit of having live music in there.
You've been covering the entertainment scene here currently with a news cafe, and prior to that with a Record Searchlight for, since the late 90s, mm-hmm. I guess, right? Do you have a feeling that this is sort of a renaissance period for musicians and live music in Reading? Have we ever had quite this much? Quite these many venues?
Well, I think maybe before I came, there was a
drop off right after you came. No connection between the two.
Well, I think what came in was DJs and you know, the kind of canned music, and some of that replaced a lot of the live music. But there was quite a scene. I mean, Arts and later Billy Bombay's. You know, the early days of that room, there was a lot of music going on. There was a classic music venue called the Oak Grove. I just kind of hear these stories about all this stuff that was going on, pretty much before my time. So, but I think there was also a real dead period there too, after DJs and there. You know, I think maybe the mid 90s there was just a period where there wasn't a lot going on. And at various times, you know, it's still you can go down to Reading and at 10:30 at night and. It's, you know, hear cockroaches and wonder where all the people went and think you're in a science fiction movie of some kind. But
where can we hear Mule Town or the Jim Dyer Band next?
Well, we're doing a weekend where the Jim Dyer Band plays on Friday, September 10th. I think that's the 10th at the post office. And then the following evening, the 11th, September 11th, the holiday, the Mule Town Band will play, so at the post office, same venue. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you for coming in to the show here, this segment anyway, and I hope you stick around because we have your old friend David Benda on for the second bit, and we've got to take a break for the news right now, but we'll be right back with David Benda of the Record Searchlight.
Thanks, Mark.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. Six degrees right now at KCNR 1460. The chat room is open, KCNR1460.com. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew on Hilltop Drive. Now, back to our guest host, Dave... Almost said Dave was running the show here. Mark Beecham here on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. David Benda is not running the show, although he probably could. David and I got to know each other starting in 2004, I think it was, when I rejoined the staff of the Record Searchlight after about a 30-year hiatus. And David and I both covered business, and We came up with a weekly column called Buzz on the Street, and we had a lot of fun with that, and I hope that it was informative to readers. And I know we broke a few stories. And you know, not writing the Buzz on the Street with David is one of the very few things I miss about not working at the Searchlight anymore. And I think we had a good rapport. I always like to say that we were like John Lennon and Paul McCartney. I was the more sort of bitter, ironic one, and he was more of a McCartney, you know, nice guy, you know, bad cop, good cop kind of dynamic. And we had a lot of fun, and sometimes when I would get a little bit too edgy, David would reel me back in. And so anyway, thank you, David, for agreeing to come in here. I know it's your first time on radio, so don't be nervous or anything like that.
Well, I'm not nervous, and that, you know, introduction, Paul McCartney, I mean, come on. Who could do better than that? But thanks for having me, Mark. How long have you been guest hosting the show now for?
Oh, just this is my second day.
No, I mean, you've guest hosted.
Oh, yeah, I've done it a couple times, yeah.
Okay, and it's the first time you've, I mean, it's a good year, and I'm not sure if I'm supposed to read too much into that, but it took you this long to have me on? Come on. I'm just kidding. Well, thanks a lot, Mark.
Yeah, I appreciate it. David, one of the reasons I thought of you to have you on today was a piece you had in the paper a week ago Sunday about how the changes, you know, driven by the Internet and other factors have affected, you know, how they've affected the bottom line of newspapers around the country, and particularly the Record Searchlight. And you had a number in there in your story which, you know, explains a lot of why the Searchlight has had to make the difficult changes that it's made over the past couple of years. A revenue number. Could you share that with the audience?
Yeah, the number you're talking about was, I believe, over a five-year period, the 40% approximate drop in revenue. And so we're going back to probably 2004, 2005 going forward. And a lot of that, obviously, as everyone knows, it's happening to papers across the country. The classified market has been taken over by Craigslist and whatnot. We've lost a lot of that market, and then just overall, people are just not advertising as much. I mean, you look at the paper today, and it's obviously not as thick, and you know we just can't keep printing pages without ads on them. So that's why the paper's a bit smaller, and car dealers have pulled back. Everybody's pulled back.
Right. And back in 2004, 2005, 2006, obviously, real estate was a really big part of the local economic scene. And that's, even though there are signs that that's coming back a little bit, it's not the boom times that it was. And so I guess the paper has been sort of hit by a perfect storm of technology, Craigslist going, poaching the very lucrative one-ad business, and then the cyclical nature of real estate, automobiles, consumer spending. And the paper has, I think, wisely made some tough choices and downsized, et cetera. Can you quantify that in your particular job? I mean, are you working a lot harder, more hours, or working harder during those 8 hours a day than you were when I was there?
Well, I mean, I look beside me, and I don't have you to kick around anymore, so there's one example. But, yeah, I mean, everyone's working a lot harder. I think you had somebody, I think it was Jeff Avery was talking about that from the Chamber, I'm sorry, it was Ken White yesterday from the Good News Rescue Mission. How people are, working two or three jobs, today just to survive. And that, that's true everywhere. And it's certainly true at the Record Searchlight. We're all working harder. But I still think, we're trying to get the news out, and we're doing a good job of getting the news out every day. People talk about how the paper has gotten smaller. But a lot of that, I believe, what has suffered is a lot of the wire and national copy. You don't see as much of that in the newspaper. I still think we're getting a lot of local stuff day in and day out in the paper. And I like to believe I'm doing my best trying to keep people abreast of what's going on with the local economy and businesses.
You're doing a heck of a job on that score, actually. And after we get back from this commercial message, we'll talk a little bit about their real estate business as well as other aspects of the local economy that you follow.
Phone lines are open, 605-4567, to join in the conversation here on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Hello,
dials anymore. Tell me what you think about everything right here every Sunday from 11 a.m. until noon on KCNR.
It's 7:43 on KCNR and 67 degrees. The weather brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Look for today's high to be near 90 degrees. Mostly clear tonight and a low of 64. It'll be warming up. 95 for tomorrow, 102 by Thursday. And now back to our guest host on Free Fire Radio, Mark Beecham.
Thanks, Bob, again. My guest during this segment is David Benda, who's the business reporter for the Record Searchlight, my former partner on a column called Buzz on the Street, which David still does, and is still one of the best reasons to pick up Sunday's paper. David, you've covered business for, what, a decade now or more?
Good 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah.
And so you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly, and I guess we're in the ugly right now.
The boom and the bust.
And the
bust. There have been a lot of booms and busts in Shasta County, and this is probably, you talk to people, this has been probably one of the most severe, if not the most severe.
You cover real estate, obviously, and that's has been a very big part of our economy in the 2000s anyway, the first decade of this century. What kind of feeling do you get from talking to realtors nowadays? Are they hopeful? Do they think there's a light at the end of the tunnel, or do they think that we haven't touched bottom yet?
Well, everyone thinks there's obviously a light at the end of the tunnel, but I don't think nobody knows, when we're going to get there, and then really nobody really, I don't think, has a good idea of if we've reached bottom yet. We're sort of, I guess we're just sort of bouncing along. I did a story a few months back where I actually talked to the economist from the Fiserv, Kay Schiller, who puts out housing data, quarterly data, and he broke down numbers for about 300 metropolitan areas across the country, including Reading. And he, if I remember, I think he said Reading probably won't start seeing any sort of appreciation until, 2011, 2012. And then he said it's probably going to take until like 2025 for us to get back to where we were at the peak of the market, which was in 2006, March of 2006, actually, when the median sales price for a home here in Shasta County is $300,000. So he said, in one sense, people hear that and they go, oh my gosh, 15 years to get back. But he said, what you got to remember is during that 15-year period, we're probably going to see, 2-3% annual appreciation. And he said, that's a normal market. What went on from 2003 to 2007 was not normal. And it's probably not going to happen again.
I remember at one point, and I remember you wrote about this, Reading led some national list about housing price appreciation for one quarter. It was up like what?
It was June of 2003, about 16%. It had gone from the first quarter of 2002 to the first quarter of 2003, and we led the nation. And that was just at the beginning of this just skyrocketing values. Where at one point there's a community, and people know about it, are very aware of it, Bend, Oregon. They were leading that index. They were appreciating homes up there like 30% annual rates. Now Bend, Oregon, and I wrote about this last Sunday, I mentioned it, for three straight quarters has led the nation in depreciation.
What goes up must come
exactly.
Down, right?
So times have changed.
The other thing that I think about a lot is the overhang of empty commercial space around Reading.
And we just picked up some more with the Ashley store going out of business that I reported on today. Some estimates when you factor in retail, office, medical, industrials, and I think you've wrote about this too, 1 million square feet in the greater Reading area of empty space.
It's pretty staggering when you think about it, and it also makes you wonder, what the heck are we doing worried about building a big retail complex out of Oasis Road? But that gets us back into city politics.
Here's something that I think this community needs to deal with is people. People are saving more today. You know, they're not spending as much. Credit card debt's going down, and for a community like Reading, you know, and all communities in California rely a lot on retail money and sales tax, but a community like Reading especially so. We're going to have to, you know, down the line deal with that if this trend continues. And it's good that people are saving more, credit card debt's going down, but for people who make money, and we're making a lot of money off that credit card debt during the boom, you know, it's going to be some, you know, rethinking of some of those strategies, you know.
Well, you know, the city budget, obviously, my critique of City Hall has been that they had rose-colored glasses on for way too long, and that they still, I think, hope that at some point in the near future, in the next couple years, that things are going to turn around and we're going to be able to afford all these, all this overhead at City Hall and the pensions and the benefits and, you know, all the things that we do from public safety to parks. And my sense is that we've entered a new era of saving and, retraction, and that the budget for City Hall is not going to expand anytime soon. We're not going to have the sales tax or the property tax revenues like we had, several years ago for quite a long time. We're just going to have to live within our means. On that hopeful note, we're going to take a quick break to go to our commercial sponsors, and we'll be right back with David Bender of the Record Searchlight.
Phone lines are open, 605-4567. You want to join in the conversation here at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. KCNR 1460, 67 degrees at 6.5 minutes before 8 o'clock. Now, back to our guest host, Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thanks, Bob. Talking with David Benda, business writer for the Record Searchlight. And David, one of the things that you write about, which seems to always generate, some of the most passionate and voluminous comments on Reading.com, is whenever you write about the comings and goings of restaurants. Do you have any idea why that is? Why people are so interested in restaurants?
The only thing I could pinpoint that on is anything that opens, it seems, here in Reading, especially restaurants, if you go there, they're always packed. They have that honeymoon period for, 2 months, 3 months. And I maybe that's why when people see stories about restaurants, they just feel the need to weigh in and comment and give their opinion. Jim, you wrote about restaurants for The Date for years. I mean, you have any thoughts on that?
I guess it's the new factor. There's something new. And, it's very tangible. You can go there, you can try the food, so it's you can have an opinion on it. You can put yourself in place of the restaurant owner. Here's what I do different, or here's what I think's right or wrong about it. So maybe that's part of it. But yeah, people seem to be pretty plugged into, you always see the numbers go up and the comments go up when it's a story about a restaurant closing or opening.
Right. What, you've covered restaurants, and I review restaurants for The Date magazine, and did when Jim was editing it, and then continue today. What do you think it takes to have a successful restaurant in Reading?
A lot of food on the plate.
I would agree with that.
I mean, I think that's true, but I think I don't think Reading is unlike any other community. Just, you know, and this is going to sound like a cliche, but, you know, good service, consistent service. You know, there's a reason everybody always brings up Starbucks. There's a reason why Starbucks is so successful. I mean, you go there every time, you're going to get, you know, the coffee's going to be good. You're going to get, your mocha's going to be made the same way. And that's why people keep coming back. And I think that's the key to any kind of, you know, food service business is consistency. And if you do that, whether it's Redding or Chico or anywhere, you're going to be successful. Boy, and you got to give credit to anybody who's opening a restaurant in these times and you know, taking a crack at it.
Well, it's so hard if you're doing it on your own dime or you're trying to do it, you know, locally. I tend to focus in my reviews on locally owned restaurants and sort of avoid the chains because I think that they get enough cooperative advertising or whatever. But and that's a great segue to a question I meant to ask Jim Dyer. Jim, there was a song that you wrote called Big Box City, which you did not inexplicably include on your CD, Magical Land. But it's my favorite song that the Jim Dyer Band has done that I've heard live. And it's about sort of a nostalgic song about everybody's lost childhood downtown. The downtown before the advent of the chains. And, you know, David put his finger on the success of the chains just then. He talks about consistency and about everything being the same and everything being, you know, what you expect when you go in. Could you talk a little bit about what inspired you to write Big Box City? I'm sorry you didn't bring it in because I would love to, you know, use it as the exit music here. But
Well, yeah, it was. I have a line in that song that, dig that big box city, got a tax break moving here, like British Empire colonies, our diamonds disappear. And I think that speaks to me, yeah, I'm just not in favor of, I don't like slave labor, low-wage jobs with, you know, where money is kind of circulated out of the community, and I think, you know, it's there's a, you know, there's this, I guess, a philosophy that we're going to build this, you know, it's going to engage the economy, but I think ultimately it doesn't work that way because of the way the goods are made. It isn't that I never shop at Walmart, but it's just that there's something that sort of drains the community, I think, about this. And it's not just Reading, obviously. There are big box stores all over the country. But until the money stays a little bit more local, until the wages and the benefits for these things, for these companies, changes, that dynamic changes a little bit, then I stand by that song. So,
yeah, it's a great song, and it reminds me of my memories of downtown Reading when most of the clothing stores were owned by local folks. I don't think those days are going to come back, unfortunately, but the song is it's one that, you know, resonates with me, and I know you've done a rock and roll version of it, you know, more of a folk version of it, and I wish I had it to play, but we don't. David, one last question. Do you see any hope for the local economy turning around in the next, say, year or two? Or do you think it's just going to sort of bounce along where it is right now?
I don't think we're going to see a dramatic turnaround in the next year or two. I think I'd like to believe it's not going to get any worse. I have no, you know, insight or inside knowledge, whether or not, you know, it is going to get worse or get better. But basically, I guess my answer is I don't know.
Like everybody else, I guess. Anyway, listen, we've got to take a break here. Thank you two for joining me this morning.
You're listening to Free Fire Media on KCNR 1460, KCNR Shasta, Redding. Good morning, 8:05 on KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media. If you're just joining us, Carl and Linda Bott still in the Washington, D.C. area on a family matter. They will be back on Thursday. It is 67 degrees in Reading, and now back to our guest host, Mark Beecham.
Thanks, Bob. My guest during the second hour today is Aaron Ryan, who is the leader of the major Tea Party group in the Reading area. And she has brought along the videographer for the group, Robert Exter. And Robert's an interesting guy. I didn't know this. Robert is an artist, a very accomplished portrait artist. And one of his sidelights, I guess, well, not a sidelight, you made a living at it over the years, is doing portraits of suspects that law enforcement use to hopefully apprehend those folks. And a couple of the cases you worked on was the Green River case as well as the Unabomb case. So we'll get a chance to talk to you in a little bit here. But Aaron, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the debate that you had a week ago Monday between Patrick Jones and Ken Murray, which I caught up on YouTube thanks to Robert's efforts, and I found really fast-paced, informative, insightful. And this format, where you didn't have a moderator, you just had the two of them asking each other questions, mm-hmm. that was your idea, right?
Yeah, I've always thought that was the most efficient way to do it. They always know everything. They know everything about the other guy, and they really hope you ask him, but most of the time we don't because we don't have the history.
And the moderator, sometimes in an effort to be, I don't know, impartial or fair or whatever, can kind of get in the way and slow things down.
Well, and if there's an inaccuracy, nobody knows. So someone can, you know, say things that sound perfectly good, and then you find out that's what happened in the primary. We had a really good question and answer team, a really good, moderator team that worked really hard on questions, did a ton of research, and then sometimes we would find out after the fact, oh, that wasn't really factual, but, 400 people just heard that, and how do you get back to them and tell them that wasn't true? So it's kind of like, hey, wait a second, we could make this faster if we let them ask each other questions.
And they presumably they ended up trying to correct one another. I mean, Patrick Jones would say, well, that's not true, or Ken Murray would say, well, that's not true.
Right.
And there's a there's a potential where it could get down in the gutter and a lot of name-calling, et cetera.
Sure,
right?
But don't you want to know that? You want to know that before they're on city council?
Well,
if they crack under pressure?
What I found really insightful about it, and I'm not actually personally, I'm not going to give away who I'm going to vote for, but from talking to some people, the reaction I got from some quarters was, a plague on both their houses. It's like, I don't want either one of these guys representing me.
And that's cool. That's cool
council.
Too.
Because the debate format
right.
showed that both of them can be kind of disagreeable or unfair.
Well, but on the other hand, you look at it and you think, okay, how many people would not have done that? I was able to do that just as an experiment because they were willing. But politically, was it their best move? You know, if you were a campaign advisor, would you want your candidate doing that? Probably not. So I've got to hand it to both of them that they were willing to do something completely different and kind of hang it out there. Plus, Ken had brought up when I kind of said, 30 seconds to ask the question, then the other guy gets a minute, you get a minute, back and forth like that. And he said, well, what if it takes longer on a topic? I was like, oh, good idea. So if we don't know what the questions are, how would we plan the time? So we created a 5-minute float bank of time for each guy. And so each guy had to figure out how he was going to use that extra time. That was interesting to watch as well.
Well, I noticed at the very end, we've got to take a break here in a second, but I noticed at the very end, Ken Murray used his time to summarize.
He had 4 minutes.
He had time left over to sort of summarize.
That's right.
And Patrick just sort of stopped in mid-sentence, like the clock had run out.
Well, he had his minute to respond, but he didn't have any banked time to do a big closing. Right. But during other comments, he's like, okay, I want to use one of my minutes. And that's why we had extra people sitting at the table. One was a timer, and the person in the middle, I did that on one side, and Elizabeth Woodward did it on the other side for Patrick. We were writing on a whiteboard, you have this much time left, you know, these are your banked minutes, this is what you can spend. It was fun.
Fascinating format, and I will see if you can apply it to other candidates going forward. Anyway, we've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Aaron Ryan of the Reading Tea Party Patriots.
605-4567 to call in and comment here on Free Fire Media on KCNR 1460. KCNR 1460, it is 67 degrees. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And it's going to be a high today near 90 degrees, 64 for the low tonight, 95 tomorrow, and 102 by Thursday. But then it will be cooling off. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Now back to our guest host, Mark Beecham on KCNR 1460.
Thank you, Bob. That's, again, very appropriate bump music, especially for our guest, Aaron Ryan, who is a leader. I guess you call yourself the leader of, you don't have, really have leaders, but the maven, I guess I call you, of the Reading Tea Party Patriots. We're talking about the debate you had a week ago, Monday, between Patrick Jones and Ken Murray, and I want to compliment you on a brilliant piece of sort of marketing to promote that debate. And Robert, who's in the studio here, your videographer and a very accomplished artist himself, he put together a poster, or helped you work on a poster, to promote the event. And he captured Patrick Jones and Ken Murray perfectly. And maybe, Robert, could you talk a little bit about how you do that and what you saw in these two individuals, how you were able to capture them the way you did?
Well, I observed Jones earlier and other videos I've had, and I knew what his face was like. I never met Murray. I never seen him in action. But I decided that I would try to have one camera on one and one on the other, but you know, there's only one videographer, so I found that Jones wouldn't stay put, so he had to walk around, and Murray was sitting down, but the camera wasn't trained on him, so I had to go back and forth, and it kind of added to the, you know, when I watched it later on, it added to the action, you know, rather than just flipping here and flipping there. No, you just go back and forth, and then you got this confrontation going on.
It was Robert's idea to do the poster. Kind of the simulated, because we were talking about how the debate would go, and I said, you know, I have watched boxing all my life, and there's nothing like a good spar, you know, and this would be similar to something like that. And Robert said, hey, yeah, that's a good idea. Next thing I know, he's emailing me this picture of the two guys. It's like, oh, that's fantastic! What a great promotion!
Yeah, it was really it was inspired.
I just told you, but we had people come who said I wasn't gonna show up, but I saw the poster.
How many people attended that debate? It was about 400?
Yeah, it was like, I think somebody counted and they said like 360. We thought maybe there were more. It was really full.
And was that one of the biggest turnouts you've had this year?
Actually, that's kind of weird because I thought it was bigger. Something before the primary, and I don't remember what it was, had 480. And so I thought, oh, this was probably more crowded than that. Someone counted and said 360, so go figure.
Okay.
It was a lot of people.
Yeah, and what are you going to do about the rest of the candidates for city council? Are you going to have more pairings like this or larger groups or what?
Kind of a larger group format, and I don't... they worked on it last night. they're going to have as many people as will come. They're going to contact all the candidates. It's going to be on the 20th. We know that much.
20th of September.
20th of September.
Okay.
So they're looking at having each of the candidates have the ability to ask one of the other candidates three questions. So it could be one person asks one candidate three different questions, or it could be you ask three different people three different questions. They can use the questions however they want. Again, a little bit, I mean, it'll be timed and all that sort of stuff, but right. A little bit of flexibility in their decision-making on what they ask and who they ask it of.
But again, no moderator.
No.
Like, okay, no moderator like they have during these lame brain presidential debates.
Because you don't learn anything. And these guys all, if they don't know each other, that's interesting too. Because think of all the things you get to find out. If they're not asking somebody questions, do they... I don't know. Do they just not know them? Do they not have any issues with them? It's very telling. And what kind of questions do they ask of each other? Is it, you know, hi, how do you like living in Reading? You know, is it something laid back like that? Or is it, what's up with your stand on, you know, the XYZ?
What kind of feedback did you get from the audience after the debate?
Well, I think the best feedback, people were really excited. I was shocked that actually nobody made a peep. During that whole thing, nobody booed, nobody cheered, nobody clapped. Everybody was really, really good, you know, just completely riveted. I think if we could have done picture-in-picture, the person that we would have put in the corner was Rick Bassetti. He looked like he was playing a game of Wii. He was completely, like, physically in the action, you know.
So Rick was there.
Yeah.
Why wasn't he on the stage?
It just so happened that we had a really short time for him to put it together, and I knew that Jones and Murray had the most history, and they were the ones who kind of threw shots at each other when we had all the candidates come in. Okay. So that part was fun. But I had people who were very concerned, didn't want the format, thought it was going to be out of control, real worried about that. And I used to teach at continuation school, and stuff. I was like, out of control wasn't one of the choices. But after the fact, that one particular guy that I'm thinking of, he actually called me up. He said, okay, that was really fun. I really liked it. So that was cool.
Where can people watch this video if they haven't seen it, if they didn't attend the event itself?
All you have to do is get on the Internet and go to the address teapartyvideo.net. And there's a page there where you can actually see most of the videos, all of the videos I've done for the Tea Party so far.
It's worth it to go there just to see the art, though, because the picture of both the guys, and then Robert changed it, and he put a button there that says, start the fight. And when you click on that, then the debate begins.
Great.
So teapartyvideo.net is pretty entertaining.
And it was a fight.
It was, too. It was cool.
So it's teapartyvideo.net,
yes.
And you can watch the whole thing. And I would encourage anybody who is going to vote in the election this fall to take a look at it, because it's very insightful. Anyway, we've got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk more local politics.
You have comments or questions, 605-4567. And get in touch with us here at KCNR 1460. This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road, just down from the Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley's the owner. He is a veteran with the 82nd Airborne. He's been servicing local customers since 1985. Give him a call down there at 244-1988. He's on Shoreland Drive, just off Airport. Look for the Satellite Dish Garden right out front, or find him on the web at readinghdtv.com. Now back to our guest host, Mark Beecham, on KCNR 1460.
Thank you, Bob. And again, my guests this morning are Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter. They're members of the Reading Tea Party Patriots organization. And we were talking about the city council debate that the Tea Party hosted a week ago Monday night. And I was going to ask Aaron, you had a pretty good turnout, but you had an unusual mix of people in the audience. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And we had there was a constitutional panel discussion held in town, I'm going to say about 2 months ago. So we participated in that with the local Progressive Democrat, Humanist Society, and ACLU groups in town. So kind of knew who a lot of these folks were. A lot of them were at the debate Monday. And
not your usual Tea Party group.
Not typically. And you know, I didn't ask what brought them there, but you could tell that it was the topic, it was the way it was couched, and it's kind of like, if we aren't there, we're going to have to hear about it later, better go. Better find out what's going on. They even went over to the question and answer rooms afterwards. So they didn't just run in, hide, and leave, which nobody should have to do. Fine, come on in. See what we're up to.
Well, my hat's off to you to get people of all political persuasions off the couch on a Monday evening, you know, down to a church on South Bonneview to get engaged in local politics.
A month before you're supposed to. Yeah. So you're not supposed to have debates until September. But we don't really do what you're supposed to do, so we made people show up in August.
During the break, we were talking about the dichotomy between local politics and national politics, and we've got cable network shows and cable talk shows and regular AM talk shows focused on national politics, which is a kind of a spectator sport for us, for people, you know, sit on their couches a lot of times who can get angry about this or that going on in Washington or whatever. But what I find frustratingly missing often is the fact that people can get all worked up and very informed in some cases and worked up about stuff going on in Washington where they have very little impact on their government.
Right.
And they are sadly ill-informed and under-involved in local politics. And do you share that frustration? And if so, what do you think that local Tea Party can do or is doing to change that?
Well, we figured out early on that if people weren't doing anything, there's no point in gathering people together so they can talk about things that everybody already knows that they can't do anything about. It's silly. And local politics is a place where they can not only make a difference, but they can also see some wins. And, you know, we always laugh. We know at Valley Forge, you know, it was cold and people were hungry and there was a lot going on. Well, I'm sure George Washington didn't walk around and talk about how bad the food was and how it was running out and how cold it was. And that's kind of what national politics is in a lot of cases. It's like, oh, it's terrible. Isn't it awful? You turn on the news. But local politics, you can meet those people. You can ask questions. You meet somebody smart. Hey, you know what? You should run. You should get on the school board. Problem is people don't get involved because they don't know what's going on. But if it was kind of exciting and it was local, easy to go to, easy to participate in, that's sort of the gateway for politics. If people are plugged into local, then national makes more sense, but there's more to get done locally, lots more.
I have a sense, you know, I go to the occasional Shasta County Supervisors meeting or the occasional City Council meeting, and I sometimes think that these are really boring meetings. And I think they're boring by design sometimes to turn off, citizens who show up and sit through them. They're boring by design, and they don't have to be boring by design. You've got city council people who can set the agenda. You've got supervisors who can set the agenda. And they should be brainstorming ways to get people off the couch into the meeting,
yep,
trying to connect topics on the agenda with their real day-to-day lives, as opposed to just mind-numbingly boring topics,
reports and numbers. All that. And I'm with you. There's a fine line between all the detail stuff and locking people out, because that's really what happens. People look at that and it's like, I don't know what that is. I don't know what that means. This doesn't have anything to do with me. When in reality, it all has something to do with them. But for some reason, our political process at all levels has become a little bit less of a partnership.
Okay, we have got to take a break here in a minute or two. I guess 30 seconds left. But when we come back, I want to talk more local politics with you, and then I want to ask Robert Exter a little bit about his career as a criminal artist, and that didn't come out right. You're not a criminal artist, but you have
criminal artist.
You have done a lot of portraits of criminals in your career. So we'll be right back after the news here with Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter of the Reading Tea Party Patriots.
KCNR 1460, it is 8:34 and 68 degrees. Now back to Mark Beecham on KCNR, the home of Free Fire Radio.
Thank you, Bob. And we're talking with Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter of the Reading Tea Party Patriots during this segment. And I wanted to ask Erin what she thinks the biggest misconceptions are about the Tea Party organization, both locally and nationally. I mean, it's come under the media microscope pretty intensively over the last year, and there have been a lot of things written and a lot of things said about it. And I have to say that I went to one meeting earlier this year, and I was surprised, number one, at the turnout on a rainy Monday evening at the I guess it was at the Holiday Inn over at on Hilltop, and by the studiousness of the crowd. There wasn't a whole lot of, I don't think President Obama's name came up even once at the meeting that I was at. You had just people who were interested in a whole lot of different topics, from local politics to constitutional law, and they were there to learn, it seemed to me, not to point fingers or get all riled up. They were there to get informed and involved. Could you talk a little bit about your perspective on the media's coverage of the Tea Party, as well as the misconceptions, perhaps, that are abroad about it?
A lot of people would, the biggest pushback I get, especially from the people who like to demean the Tea Party, is that, well, where were you during George Bush's term? You know, where were you during that? It's like, well, you know, things happened a certain way. You know, Rick Santelli went on a tear on the stock exchange floor, and it sparked some interest, and people got involved. It was on the heels of a huge game changer with President Obama. But when we started this project, it became abundantly clear that if this was all about this administration, then we could set our watches and this project would be done in 4 years. What a waste of time. We have to be for the country, for the principles that it stands for, not against something, because then once you're done being against it, it's over, which is how we all became the silent majority to start with.
Right. My sense is that there was an awful lot of discontent with the Bush administration.
Absolutely.
That there was a perception that it was fiscally out of control, that the president was waging two wars as well as passing Medicare Part D and a whole lot of other government programs. And, in the process of running the economy into the ditch, and this predated the new administration.
But see, things that were going on that I think people didn't even realize that now, or have watched over the last year and a half, I don't think most people even realized how much the Patriot Act was taking away their freedom, because it had everything to do with being safe. So there's that weird balance. How much of your rights do you go up to be safe? Lots of those things all of a sudden were called into question, and people realized, I think everybody came together and it's like, do you know anything about this? No. Do you? No. Why don't we know anything about this?
Could you, I know the Tea Party is not a organized national party.
No.
But what are the defining issues that it's been formed to address?
Limited government And I, you know, we get all the bloggers, you know, oh, you want to destroy the government? No, we don't want to destroy the government. We just want to put the government back in perspective with the people. You know, we came here to this country not to be ruled by somebody. And when the rules get so oppressive that you can't make a decision about your own property or your own space because the government is the boss of it, you can't do business because the government is so overreaching, you can't even afford to do business. Those are problems. So limited government. The whole topic of fiscal accountability, what's happening there? You know, should we be bailing people out? Should we not? Where are our tax dollars going? I think most people, I didn't realize, but we work 221 days for the government before we start making money in this country now. Now, I remember when I first went to work, I'm 49, the joke was always you have to work till like March or April. Now it's August? That's pretty spooky. And then constitutional principles
right. That
we've kind of gotten away from because we were in eighth grade. Nobody remembers.
I mean, sure.
Out of sight, out of mind.
How do you address the charge? I've heard this often expressed by the commentators on cable or on the blogs that the Tea Party is hypocritical in the sense that you have a lot of your membership is predominantly older Americans who are legitimately concerned about the cost of government, but are also receiving Social Security, Medicare, other government benefits. Is there, how do you address that charge that it's a bunch of hypocrites?
Well, you don't, it's kind of like your house. You know, your house got really dirty, you let it go, you've been on vacation, you know, things happen. Do you burn the thing down or do you live in it while you clean it? You know, you always have the choice. Burning it down is kind of extreme. So at some point, people are coming to this idea, they're getting educated, they're learning, but we haven't stopped time and rewritten it. It's not going to happen. Everything happens in a continuum, but the one thing I am noticing is that our older folks are, for one, the dominant group. I mean, they're the baby boomers for a reason. There are lots of them. So people worry, you know, oh, it's just old people. There's not enough young people. You know what? If they're interested, I don't care how old they are. Because interested people get things done. So, God love the older people. I mean, they're awesome. They were the bravest ones. They came out when people were afraid that the government was going to, you know, take down their license plate and get them in trouble a year and a half ago. They've always been the brave ones. They keep the door open. And so when young people figure this out, you know, down the road, the older generation, they knew how important it was.
Great. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue discussing local politics with Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter of the Reading Tea Party Patriots.
605-4567, phone lines are open here on KCNR 1460.
Hi, this is...
Seventeen minutes now in front of 9 o'clock here on KCNR 1460. The weather brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Look for a high today around 90 degrees. It'll be mostly clear tonight, warming up as we head deeper into the week, 95 tomorrow and 102 by Thursday. Weather, as I said, always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Right now at KCNR 1460, 70 degrees as we return to our guest host, Mark Beauchamp.
Thank you, Bob, and we're talking with Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter of the Reading Tea Party Patriots about local politics. And during the break, Aaron mentioned that the Tea Party group here is actually quite successful, and it's sort of playing a consulting role, I guess, helping Tea Parties all around the North State and even up into Oregon organize and build their local organizations. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Lots of groups have gotten together thinking that it was all about national issues. And then when that happens, there's nothing to do. And after a while, when you've all said what you're mad about, then there's nothing to do. We started really early on with the action groups and the education that you mentioned earlier. And that model is something that people are really looking for. So besides the groups that we've worked with, Red Bluff, Corning, Fall River, Mount Shasta, Alturas, those groups we've been working with right straight along, but Crescent City has decided to partner with us because they like the model. The guys in Klamath Falls, they're partnering with us. They like the model. The Bend, there are five groups up in Bend who've asked a group of us to come up and help them on October 2nd, and they're putting together a huge, you know, we've got the TV, we've got the radio. We're like, okay. we're going to Yuba City tomorrow night. A group of people down there, their group, they want to be more active. They're not getting enough done. And so they're like, come down and help us figure out how to get more stuff done. So we've become the group that gets things done.
Do you have a day job?
No.
Okay, so you have time to actually do all this stuff. I was wondering if you were trying to...
But it's not just me. I mean, you know, we have kind of a team, you know. Terry and Sally and Elizabeth and Andrew and there are a whole bunch of us. And so we cover all these different places and we all have different skills. So depending on what they're looking to do, Terry and Sally have been fantastic with all the gear. So they're helping the groups fund themselves.
Okay.
So everybody has a skill.
We've got a caller, Art, on line one with a question.
Yeah, hi. I have a comment to make to everybody in the studio there today. If there's anyone there that does not believe that the rise of the Tea Party and their power is not in direct opposition to the rise of Barack Hussein Obama, they are either charter members of the DNC or they're living in a cave. This Tea Party and this movement is about stopping Mr. Obama's push for a European-style socialism that he's trying to put on the American people, and they will not accept it. And if anybody doubts me, watch what happens in November. When the Democrats who supported this guy that got himself elected on a pack of lies get swept out by the dozens, the Tea Party is the firewall that rose up because of the policies of this president.
Okay, well, thank you.
No one should ever doubt that or think that, well, you know, we weren't around when Bush was here. Bush was not perfect, no doubt about it. Compared to what we've seen legislatively, pushed by this character, Bush looks like a prince. And I didn't always agree with him.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your call. I'll get Aaron to respond to it. Aaron?
That's true. A lot of folks, they're very, very worried. They're looking at what's going on here, what's gone on in Europe. They're looking at the overreach, and it's a march of overreach. But I think that the balancing act is that we don't... If people think it's only about this, then in November, you know, if the House and the Senate are now flipped, then everybody goes back to the couch. That's the problem. That's how we get into this. We got to keep from getting into this. That's the name of the game, is a long-term fix. It isn't just we're freaked out about what's happening right this minute. So, you know, I think he would have a lot of support for that. But that's not the only thing we're doing. And if it is, we're spending a huge amount of time on a really limited project, which is a mistake.
Going back to your focus on local politics, because it's a local group and you have study sessions about how to read city council agendas, local issues, etc. Why aren't you going to endorse candidates for City Hall or Board of Supervisors after you have all these different forums? Why aren't you going to give your members some guidance as to who they should vote for?
You know, in a thing like this, we have no membership, no official membership. People are not candidates of the Tea Party. People are not members of the Tea Party. That's all a misnomer. But the biggest thing is, why would you come together in the cause of freedom and then tell everybody what to do? You know, how are you going to get all these people to agree on the same person? So let's just say let's do Keene and LaMalfa. That's an easy one. Say you have half the group wanted Rick Keene, half the group wanted Doug LaMalfa for the primary. So let's say we endorse Rick Keene, and then Rick Keene doesn't win. So we alienated the first half of the group, and they quit. Then after Rick Keene didn't win, the rest of the group quit. So that's one issue. I mean, that's just a pragmatic issue. But beyond that, let's face facts. I mean, Mark Sanford was a real Republican hopeful for 2012. I had never heard of him until he went to Argentina and got a girlfriend. What a huge mistake. Can you imagine his supporters? It's like, oh, it took an arrow right in the back. So being independent and having candidates come, they know they have to meet every single person, and they know they have to get every single vote. We're not going to deliver them like sheep in a wagon for them. It just isn't happening.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break here, our last break, and when we come back, I want to ask Robert Exter a little bit about his interesting career as an artist, helping law enforcement track down infamous desperados, including the Unabomber.
And the chat room is always open, KCNR1460.com. More coming up on the home of Free Fire Media.
Imagine...
KCNR 1460 coming up on now 6 minutes in front of 9 o'clock. Now back to our guest host, Mark Beecham.
Thank you, Bob. We're here with Aaron Ryan and Robert Exter of the Reading Tea Party Patriots. And Robert, I want to get to you before we run out of time here. You've had a very interesting career. You are a very accomplished portrait artist. But your past work has included some portraits of some very interesting people who have been, I assume, on the FBI's most wanted list, etc. Could you talk briefly about how you got into this this business and a couple of the, make a reference to a couple of the major cases you've worked on?
Well, I've worked on the Green River and the Unabomber. I did the first, it was a color watercolor I did for the Unabomber in Salt Lake City in 1987. And how I got into it, well, I've always been a gifted artist, and even when I was in the, I did 4 years in the Air Force, and while I was in the Vietnam War, but I was lucky. I had to fight the bikinis on the beach at Waikiki. So I would go out and I would do portraits of the bands, and I was always carried my sketch pad with me. I've always been an artist. And And when I got out of the service, I moved to Sacramento, and I was doing I did portraits in the malls, and then I got involved doing portraits for newspapers, their little columnist portraits that they have at the head of the their little article, and then I started watching the TV, and I saw, oh, they had the East Area Rapist, and their artist for the sheriff's department looked like anybody, you know, you could pulling anybody off the street. It was so vague. And I said, well, I bet I can do something about that, and introduced myself to the Sacramento Sheriff's Department, which carried the law enforcement for the north area. It was not, that was the police. They didn't have police in that, in the north area. And Ray Biondi, their top investigator there, and another, Dan White, they were the guys that controlled the investigation. They wanted to work around their artists, and so they hired me on, and I started doing portraits, and that's how I got started. Because they were effective, it got me to do some very, very interesting things. I've had a very interesting life for a poor artist. Because I never was a policeman. I was always a jobber. I always did a contract with them. They never asked me to cut my hair and join the police and start shooting people.
But it's an interesting challenge to interview witnesses or investigators and to take their words, and they try to describe the way somebody looks, and then turn it into something that approximates the actual suspect.
Well, to the skeptical people, it's called cognitive. It's you work from a description, and if you've ever seen somebody on the street and you ask them for time walking down the street, you probably wouldn't remember that person. But if the guy pointed a gun at you and you saw him again, you got in the elevator with him again, you get scared. And so if you've got an image like that, if you really recognize something that was dangerous, you know, you go down there, you recognize these things. It's a visual, you call it a visual imprint. And my job is to use pictures to eliminate the possibilities until we've got something we can use. And I show them features of noses and mouths and sometimes full faces, because a good witness is not going to get confused. If they can get confused, you haven't got a witness.
So you're actually showing the person various components of a face, and
right.
they're saying, well, that yeah, it looks like the guy's nose, it looks like the guy's mouth, or that's about the height of his forehead, or
sometimes,
whatever.
Sometimes, yeah.
And you're using all these pieces to actually render somebody's face.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And you have to be good at anatomy. You have to have done many, many portraits. And, of course, I don't get paid unless I do a good likeness. I can't make somebody look like a freak, you know. So I know how to assemble a face and change it. If they ask me to change something in a drastic way, I might know what caused that effect to make them say that. So I can sometimes I have to work several things when they just comment on one thing, because you have to change the whole arrangement of proportions. So if you want to see my work, it's at policecompositeartist.com.
Policecompositeartist.com.
Right.
Okay.
And you can see the quality of work there, because there's different qualities in police art. And
you also do, besides bad guys, you do portraits of people, right? Grandma and grandpa and et cetera.
You mentioned that I made money as a police artist. Well, it's not the mainstay. The mainstay was doing portraits and family portraits. And, when you think about it, some people come in with pictures of their elderly people that have passed away, and they don't have a good picture, so I sometimes have to do something like a composite.
Well, that's great. And again, it just blows my mind sometimes, the interesting people that we have living around us in rural Northern California. And I want to thank the two of you, Aaron and Robert, for joining us today on Free Fire Radio. And tomorrow we've got Trish Clark and Reverge Anselmo, and the bots will be back on Thursday.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.